Hi, Internet. My name is John Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack fiction without the friction. Yay! Picture more people screaming.
That's
picture one of them is a demon. Well, Melissa is going to be a little hyped because she has some good news.
I have awesome news. I have sold my first novel. I have a book deal, guys. Yay!
All the demons in the house say ho.
Oh, anyway. So, I now have a book deal with Kyanite Press. It will hopefully be coming out next spring. The title is Song of the Wild. For now, that may change. I don't know how all this works.
That would be my deal. Creative contribution to the four.
That was his assistance.
Which, actually, I'll bring up later, because there is an adaptation of Call of the Wild coming out. I thought it sounded very literary. But anyway, I am super excited, because this is the lady who got me into all this stuff, and now she's getting a publishing deal.
Yeah, man.
She's playing with the big boys now.
It's a for real publishing.
With the big boys now.
Not one of the big five, obviously, Tiny Press, but that's okay, because they're awesome, and they are
which I said was what makes her one of the cool people now.
Because it's
Jerry from Peter Arcade jokes about, like, nobody wants to be published by DC. Boo.
Who needs them big old guard fogies?
Yes.
I got me a hip indie press deal.
We're on the cutting edge, baby. Speaking of which, I'm starting to make wheels and deals with some of the people. Namely, an independent creator named Matt Cross.
Yes.
We started a show called Strider Talk. And so if you follow Strider Talk on Twitter and you look up on YouTube, we're there. And we're going to be talking every Monday. We're doing a live show on YouTube called Strider Talk. We're going to be talking about writing and independent publishing from the perspective of a kind of like horror and literary writer. Like myself, and Matt is a historical fiction comic book creator. And I also just got a bunch of comics from a friend. So I've been going through some DC metal storylines that would be interesting. And I'm excited to talk about comics and talk with some comic creators. We're trying to do another show called Uphill Battle that'll be with other indie people. So Michelle will probably be on one of the things.
But it has to be a night when I'm not gaming, because Monday night's game night.
Yes, it will be. We're already working out the details. And also, just to force myself to keep writing, I'm writing White Devil, a light novel on a site called Tapas. And it's a...
Which I think is a really awesome name for bite-sized writing bits.
Oh, yes. Yes, for those interested in the culinary arts, it's a cool metaphor for what they do, because it's a webcomics platform, but they also have light novels, and I'm posting two pages every Monday. It's a kind of Lovecraft story. The basic elevator pitch is Ned and his dog, Bill Murray, fight for survival in a new world order controlled by monsters. So come imbibe. We also just came back from Evil Expo.
Yes.
Which was dope. We had a table and we talked to a lot of cool, interesting people, gave out some stuff. Our friend Jason was there selling his kaiju, prints and things, which are up on the Strider store. That's another thing that's part of this whole Strider thing. I launched a, sci-fi horror fantasy brand, and we're going out of an Etsy/shop/Strider Co. And you can get Jason's kaiju prints and some of Matt's merchandise. He has a cool, but my favorite piece of merchandise so far is a blanket or beach towel that has it's a depiction of the Emperor's triumph, and it says has triumph in big letters. And he has his villain, I'm blanking on the name of him, but He looked kind of like a Disney villain. He kind of looks like Hades a little bit in, like, how, like, his expression. He's very smug. So I really like that. And I really enjoyed Evo Expo. I thought it was pretty cool. The people were all very nice.
Yes, the people were all very friendly. You could tell it was the first year, mm-hmm. but that's not anybody's fault. That's just because it's the first year.
Yeah.
But yes, everybody was real friendly. There was a lot of really awesome cosplayers.
There were people with... I don't know if I want to say this, but there were people with pet cockroaches.
Yes.
And like,
which was disturbing.
There was kind of like a sideshow atmosphere. This idea that like weird people are welcome.
Yes.
And thankfully, and none of those weird people got in trouble.
I got introduced to Holly, right? Holly Brewer.
Uh huh.
It was a very interesting style of music. I don't know how to explain it to you. You will just have to look her up.
Yes.
But they had a lot of interesting music acts, a lot of fun vendors. They had the guy there that did puppets for like Jim Henson. Did you go over there and see? He had what's her name there too? The big giant Venus flytrap.
I didn't even know this was here.
He had like stuff from Labyrinth, and he's the one that had made the puppet for the guy next to us.
Oh, right, right, right.
And he had I can't think of her name. Who's the big Venus flytrap? Audrey. He had Audrey in there, like the big one.
Right. Oh.
Watch out,
here comes Audrey too.
Yeah. Anyway. So it was lots of fun stuff. Oh, somebody over there also had like a full, like a scale mock-up of the Enterprise.
Oh.
It was fun.
I sold my soul for a donut.
Yes, for a donut. He didn't even hold out for like a Long Island iced tea or anything. He sold it for a freaking donut.
Yes.
I'm very disappointed.
To Justice, who was there, she didn't hold anybody up. She held a meetup, and that was fun. Yeah, it was an interesting convention. That was kind of like a mixture of like carnival stuff and goth and metal and kind of like dark fantasy elements. And yeah, I thought it was dope. I would recommend. Any of you in the tri-state area up here in, like, you know, Jersey, Delaware, PA, to check it out if you're interested. Next on the docket, your space boyfriend.
My space boyfriend has returned. Forget all these other foolish space boyfriends that I have had in between.
So let's...
Hux is out. The Mandalorian is out. None of them can compare.
So let's,
to Picard.
Let's kind of trace for those of you just joining us. Melissa has had an interesting relationship with the new Star Trek things.
Yes.
And we've talked about this kind of generally, how you do like Picard and everything. But what would you say has improved from like Discovery? Like, what do you think that is like different?
Maybe. So, I'm not sure how to put it into words because I haven't watched Discovery in a while, so I don't have like it fresh in my head to compare.
Uh-huh.
But they went grimdark with Star Trek, which I don't mind grimdark sci-fi because I enjoyed like Altered Carbon, I enjoyed
The Expanse,
like I like them. But it's not Star Trek. Star Trek has never been grimdark. It's always been a very utopian view of the future.
Uh-huh.
And it annoyed me that they did that. That was one
thing.
Uh-huh. Another was the drama all felt very forced.
Uh-huh.
Like, it didn't feel like it was coming from the problems in the story. It just felt like we're going to create drama for the sake of creating drama. Which I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are in the past again.
Uh-huh.
Which I think was a big mistake that they with Enterprise to begin with, and then they did it again with Discovery and putting in things that had never been mentioned anywhere else in Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
So that was annoying. With Picard, rather than going back, they have finally gone forward in the timeline.
Oh. To infinity. Sorry.
No. They are putting in good drama that is coming because of events that happened in the story.
Uh-huh.
And of course it's, you know,
Space Boyfriend.
Space Boyfriend. it's Sir Patrick Stewart, who can make you believe any drama he wants.
Now I feel like the part that is interesting to talk about, I mean, okay, that sounded bad. That was all very interesting. What I mean to say is that rather than say, this doesn't make sense to me personally, but I think last time we talked about it, it did. You made it made sense to me, where the critiques that I've been hearing are that the people that are in charge of the new Star Trek don't really care about any of what has happened.
Right.
And so with this, like the critique that I heard specifically from the Red Letter Media guys, they were specifically talking about how, like, Data and Picard weren't the best of friends. It's Data.
He's very particular about how you pronounce his name.
He doesn't seem like that kind of character.
No, it's his name. He does. Because there was this whole argument with the doctor on Next Generation that everybody hated, Pulaski. Uh-huh. She called him Data, and he didn't like it. He's like, my name is Data. Please pronounce it correctly.
So Duda was...
Don't make me hurt each other.
Data and Picard weren't necessarily the best friends, and that it seemed like, in general, they were trying to foist a refugee allegory onto it. And what I'm interested in is, how do you think it makes the drama work when traditionally the Federation is known for being kind of like this utopic world?
Right.
And the point of it is normally they make the choice for democracy, and it's more of like the Enterprise as a microcosm, as opposed to their commenting on politics.
So I was surprised, actually, when you said that they were accusing it of being this like refugee-specific, like political message.
Uh-huh.
Because to me, that sounds more like they would be talking about like current refugees trying to break, like, to cross the border into the Federation, or like people getting smuggled in still, or people being there illegally.
Uh-huh.
And that isn't the case. Mm-hmm. Like, there are Romulans living with Picard. They're his, like, house domestic servants.
Uh-huh.
Or whatever. They help him run the vineyard that he has. And they're not there illegally. It's not like people are upset that they're there. They're not being treated terribly. Like, there's not, like, some slang bad word for Romulans.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it doesn't feel like that.
Uh-huh.
So, and then in the second episode, they kind of go into a bit more detail. Like, in the first one, they're interviewing Picard, and they're asking him why he left Starfleet. And he gets mad at them because Starfleet pulled out of saving the Romulan refugees.
Right.
But then he has an argument in the second episode with somebody high up, like with another admiral in Starfleet. And she points out that, yes, we wanted to go save them, but there were like 8 worlds in the Federation that were telling us they were going to leave the Federation if we kept helping them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we had to keep the Federation together. We didn't have a choice. Like, they're trying to justify what happened.
Uh-huh.
And
Picard, so it's not just xenophobia.
Right. It's not just like, oh, they're Romulans. I mean, it might have been, that's why, that might have been why the other worlds were like, we can't help these people. These people have been our enemies for how long? Uh-huh. And you want us to go save them?
Right.
Like, what? But it's not like, oh, you can't live on Earth, because they're there.
Uh-huh.
It's not like people aren't willing to work with them, because then the, as of yet, not quite, I don't quite understand if it's the Romulans running it or who's running it, but the Borg cube that they're studying has people from all different races on it. So it's not just Romulans there. It's Romulans and humans and Andor, like Federation worlds, all of them are there studying this Borg cube together. So it's not like they're not... Like, I don't know what the status is.
So you're saying...
I think they're no longer at war with Romulus? I don't know what the deal is.
So... You're saying that it's not as jarring as it's not as strident as like just having a straight one-to-one.
Right. It's not border
that wall
even on
type thing.
Even in the Next Generation proper in the show, when Worf was an officer, he was the first Klingon to serve in the Federation, and they had been warred, the Klingons and them had been at war for a long time previously, but they weren't anymore, and they hadn't been for a while.
Right.
More people made a big deal out of him being there than anybody on this show is making a big deal. I mean, not that there's Romulans at Starfleet. That might be a different thing. They're not, like, in the military or anything. Uh-huh. But they're living on Earth, and it's not, like, this huge, oh, my word, why are they here thing. At least not yet.
I think the major point that they were talking about was the idea of, like, the news. Like, there's that news lady that's talking to him, and it makes it seem like there's, like, this thing of he acted in this, like, kind of, like, trying to make him seem like this bleeding heart person that's, like, that's acting independently and trying to do this, like, very political thing. And, like, does it seem like the idea is that whereas before it would have been the ship as a unit fighting some kind of problem, now it's more he's like this kind of like he's this idealistic like hero and he's the one fighting this major
they're trying to make it thing. Look that way. Like the media would probably try and make it look that way. Like they're accusing him of being that, but it wouldn't have just been him. Like this is the kind of thing that on any given Star Trek show, the Enterprise would go be, as a unit would go do this kind of thing. So like, it wouldn't have just been him saying, "Oh, we need to go save these Romulans." His entire ship would have been like, "Yeah, man, this is Picard. We're behind him. He makes the best decisions. We know what he's talking about. We're all with this guy." Hmm. There were very, very few times when anybody on his crew argued with him. Some of which you got in the movies when he was dead set on killing every last Borg he possibly could. And then they got on him for that because they're like, you can't just exterminate the race. Yes, we know you hate them and they're terrifying. But that's not how this works. So he's like, I'm not doing that. But that was always, any of the captains were always like that. They would always come up with a thing that they knew was right and they knew they had to do, whether Starfleet agreed with them or not. And they would go do the thing and their crew would be with them because their crew knew them. And trusted them. So, like, Picard has this plan, and his Romulan friends that are in his house are like, you can't go do this by yourself. You're too old for this. Like, you're going to get yourself killed. You need to go get your crew, because they knew his crew would do that with him. And he's like, I'm not risking them again. I've done that to them every single time, and I can't do that to them again. So he's going to go find other people to help him, but not his old friends that would definitely follow him into hell and back, because he feels responsible for them.
Right. And anyway. I think in general, I get the impression, just based on how you describe it, that it's less, like, because we had talked before about there's this weird battle between, if you're writing something sci-fi, you want it to be about problems that you can only describe through some kind of sci-fi thing.
Right.
And, but then you need there to be a dramatic element, otherwise it's not a story, it's a lecture.
Right.
So, or a sermon or whatever. So I think what's interesting is that it seems like from what you're saying, they're trying to portray a very emotionally or politically fraught problem, but through this idea of like, and there are sci-fi maybe elements to it, but there seems to be this pushback both with Star Trek and Star Wars, that there are people that can do the can blend theme and plot very well.
Yeah.
And there are some that can't.
Yes.
But that for some reason that seems to be explained and talked about as good and bad sci-fi. But I think part of the purpose of this podcast is to talk about how there is an essential, most of the time there's an essential writing problem, and it's not really a problem with genre.
No.
Like, I think it takes more than
it's just what people writing. Are
putting into their criticism to explain this is a trend in sci-fi that's going poorly. Because I feel like with both Star Trek and Star Wars, like, so, like, for example, with Star Trek, there were all these things where, like, random space phenomena happen to drive plot, and it seems arbitrary. Or you get this whole thing of, like, usually the problem is, like you're saying, all the, they kind of took Star Trek and made it like Mission Impossible, where the whole point is, this is a unit, and they all kind of follow the lead of this one person, But when you change the type of problem that they're facing, it becomes more of a spy heist, or like there's just a different type of, like, it's no longer this idea of like, this is a different type of world. Like, they're usually speculative in nature.
Right.
Like, this is a world where this has gone wrong, and so we're going to try to work this out together, as opposed to this is like a superhero team.
Right.
And because they are especially gifted, they can defeat this problem.
Right.
It's kind of a lower resolution.
So DS9 was my favorite, but I think the thrust of what they were attempting to accomplish through science fiction was encapsulated with The Next Generation. Because the very first episode is the first time you see Q.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing that Q is attempting to do is putting humanity on trial.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, you guys have committed some of the worst atrocities in the galaxy. Why should we let your race exist?
Mm-hmm.
Basically. And Picard and all of Star Trek's main drive is a very humanistic theme.
Uh-huh.
In that humans can overcome this. We don't have to be the bad guys of the galaxy. We can progress. We can make ourselves better. Mm-hmm. We can make this a utopic world. We can do what's right. And his whole drive was to show that. And so the bookend of The Next Generation was also Q showing up at the end. Mm-hmm. And Picard proving to him, this is why we would keep going on.
Mm-hmm.
So when Discovery comes along and turns it into this, like, the captain has PTSD and the main character is this chick that was put away for, she was dishonorably discharged because they blamed her for it. It wasn't really technically her fault, but they blamed her for this massacre that happened because it was just running with the Klingons. Mm-hmm. And she was trying to get them to react the way they were supposed to, and they didn't, and the Klingons blew everybody up. Anyway, it was not that same kind of utopic thrust anymore.
Uh-huh.
It was much more of a, we're going to make this like a dark, creepy, make mm-hmm. you feel sad for the world sci-fi thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like I said, it may have changed. I only watched the first the first half season.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how they're treating Spock, because I think another big thing about Picard is whoever's writing this understands who Picard is.
Uh-huh.
Like, they have his character down.
Right.
And they are showing you how painful it is to watch him age out of being what he wants to be, what he has always been.
Right.
And how he's not going to go down to that fight.
I think that's the thing that is, it's difficult to do, but it's strange to me that they think that you have to sacrifice a big problem in order to show, like, how an individual, like, deals with that problem. And so you can take something like war, and you can have, like, with Star Trek Discovery, this idea of like, okay, so this person has PTSD and this person is, you know, a scapegoat for some problem, and you're dealing with all these individual threads that you lose the big picture of what's going on. But I think that it's something that I like about superhero stories, is that if you're doing it right, it's some kind of like, you're reducing the resolution of the character, maybe, but you're showing, okay, this is what I think is necessary about this story. And so you're able to then say, like, okay, take like V in V for Vendetta. He thinks that anarchy is necessary in order to fight a dictatorship. And so it tries to illustrate that by having him take in somebody and drive her nuts, but then show her, like, this is what I went through. And, you know, it was a very systematic thing of,
right,
he's going to show her each, like, by taking revenge on each of the people that put him in his concentration cell, he's going to show her how everything is corrupt, but then that the people have the power to rebel. So it was a very, like, you could make the case, if you want to be a realist about it, that not every person in a, you know, oppressive government goes through all of the things that this character did. But basically what Alan Moore chose to do was say, Like, these are all the things that make a fascist government. Maybe they don't all happen in each of the bad governments in the world, but I'm going to use this as an allegory to show, like, this is what's possible. This has happened before. So you don't, you get a kind of larger than life character that represents something. Anyway, but I feel like that's a big problem with modern sci-fi and fantasy was there are all these characters that are very neurotic, and it's so like the story is so isolated to them just having the courage to do the right thing. Whereas it seems like with classic Star Trek, the whole idea is that they will do the right thing. And it's not about whether they'll have the desire.
Right. It's not whether or not are they going to do the right thing. Oh, no, are they going to be? I mean, they had some that were moral quandary things. Mm. But the other ones are like, nope, there's a problem. We do the right thing. That's our job. And we're going to go do it. And it's the adventure of them doing it.
Right.
That made it cool to me.
Well, I'm glad you like
Picard. I heart Picard so hard.
Okay, but this is why we move on. All right, after the break, we're going to talk about Parasite, because I enjoyed that very much. We both watched it. And then we'll do as much as we can before the end of the show.
Yes.
All right.
Squeeze a whole bunch of other loving stuff in it.
We'll see you soon. And we're back.
Yo, yo.
You thought this was a Run DMC album there for a second?
Yeah, man.
Yo, yo. I'm not even going to try to do any of that. Oh, speaking of that, I guess I'll move this forward in the notes. We watched the Grammys.
Yeah.
And considering it was like our first thing back from Evil Expo, it was nice to just kind of chill.
Yes.
And watch a nice like concert thing. Started off with Lizzo.
Yep.
She was the bomb.
Yep.
And she had a flute solo.
Yeah, which is all kinds of awesome.
Which was cool. And she was dressed, her and her crazy background self. Dancers were like in Tron.
Yeah, I don't know outfits. What that was.
But it's kind of cool, right on. And then, oh, and you saw you were introduced to Tyler the Creator.
Yes,
which that was for all the weird stuff that he gets up to. That was a very interesting first like thing to watch of him, because I liked how they set up the set. Like it was still very odd. I mean, yeah, and oh, but it was cool that Boyz II Men were his background.
That was cool.
Singers.
They still got it.
And then he, like, disappeared into, like, a lake of fire or something.
I don't know what was going
in the back of the stage.
It was very, the setup was very well done. I can't say it's my favorite style of music ever, but it was good.
But it's interesting because it seems like experimental hip-hop is, like, big right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people doing some cool things.
And then shout out to the MC. I don't want to get her name wrong.
Oh, yes. Alicia Keys.
Alicia Keys.
Because, holy crap.
For having to deal with a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, it was very shortly after the news about Kobe Bryant came out. And it seemed like some producer or maybe just, you know, her understood like, okay, this is a very light, like, these are very light, what do you call it? Like speeches or whatever that are interstitial things that we have. So we need to kind of call attention to the fact that we did not do this with any foreknowledge that, that this news would be out here at the time.
So she did a very good job of...
But she was very graceful.
Yeah, about remembering him in the beginning. And I think everybody was very respectful. It was very well done. And then our girl Billie Eilish, man.
Her and her brother were out there doing like the glam Elton John stuff.
A lot of sparkles. A lot of sparkles. Oh my.
Oh, and then Demi Lovato was very good.
Yeah.
She did Eddie One, her a very recent
very beautiful
single. As he has very,
I felt like she was just going to start crying any minute.
Yes,
but it was beautiful.
She did a very good job pulling it together, and making people feel what she feels through that song. That was very good, very emotional performance.
But
there was a Run DMC. Aerosmith.
That was awesome.
They did walk this, and they brought down the house
like nobody's business.
That was very good.
And who's the dude that did the cowboy hip hop?
Oh,
with the rotating Lil stage.
Nas X. Okay, yes,
that was fun.
So there,
that was more fun than it should have been.
for those of you who are, well, no, I mean, that's the funny thing is that Lil Nas X, like, the internet gave birth to him. So there are probably a lot of people that do know what we're talking about. So if you haven't heard, Lil Nas X did a song, Old Town Road, that he wrote after playing Red Dead Redemption one day.
We need to play now because you have PlayStation again.
Yeah, oh, true.
We should play this.
So, but then Billy Ray Cyrus found out about it and he gave him some country cred by being a featured artist. And then the little boy from Walmart that did the yodeling, that was it. He actually...
He was so cute.
Yes. He was another featured artist on it. But then they threw in BTS, the K-pop band.
That was so much fun.
It was just kind of like a...
All of it was way too much fun. And now let us present
the internet.
Yeah. Like, we're going to do all the internet groups right now, all at once on the stage.
Yeah.
All together, same song. Like, you're so like, that was a very
funny...
Happening?
That was a fun... Like, the way that they did it. And, it was a very fun performance.
But I'm just really happy that Billie Eilish won Best Song of the Year on a song that her and her brother recorded in their bedroom.
Yes.
Like, I am blown away by this whole phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Even, like removing the fact that we just worked on something together.
Yes.
Manic Pixie, look it up. It's a thing.
Don't hate me.
If you hate her, don't say anything.
Yeah, don't tell me. Listen to it, enjoy it, do whatever
but
you want.
I doubt that will happen because you didn't even recognize how good you sounded.
It was just weird. I don't understand.
Anyway, but what I was going to say is that it's, as a digital creator in general, it is very validating to hear somebody say, I made this thing in my room and it worked.
Yeah.
So, like, because that, just coming from going to college where you're just up all night doing some digital thing, and you're like, this is not real. This does not exist. It is just ones and zeros, and it's not going to go anywhere. It was cool to say, like, yeah, we put noises in a thing, and then we sang
and
over that thing.
Liked it.
And then people liked it.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Granted, she is an amazing artist, and her brother's an amazing music, I don't know what you call it. Producer? What is his title? I don't know. But they both won Grammys for being what they are. And they're fantastic.
Yes. Yes. Many
props
kudos
all around for Grammys.
We also watched Parasite.
Yes.
Last night. Many, many hypes I heard.
Yes.
Before
what,
this.
Are you Yoda now? many hypes
there were. Because I kept hearing about it, and then I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes, and it was like, critics 99%, audience 99-something percent. I'm like, oh, okay, I need to watch this. And thankfully it's on, even though it's a foreign film, it recently got put out by Fandango now for, like, rental prices. And I thought it was really good.
Yes.
I really liked the cinematography of it. It was very good. It was very, like, Hitchcock and how, like, the camera, like, drove the story. It was interesting because one major thing I was thinking was I'm really interested to see what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
I actually don't know.
Yeah. I couldn't guess. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. Because there are major twists in it.
Yes.
And there are, like, because it is so, it is a blackly comic thing. And I think it did very good. It was very even in how, like, it was. There were many funny things happening, and the dialogue was very humorous.
Yes.
And at the same time, there was this feeling of, like, dread. And you really, you put yourself in the shoes of the characters
mm-hmm.
to the point where it was, like, I was kind of thinking of it as, like, a thriller starring the Three Stooges. Because a lot of the, there was a lot of physical.
Yeah, there was a lot of very,
like,
physical,
theatrical acting happening. So it felt like.
But I wasn't sure if that was a function of them trying to make it comedic necessarily, or if that was a style for Korean.
Yeah, I that's what I was thinking. But what made it funny was, like, for example, I won't say who, but somebody pushes somebody down the stairs.
Yeah.
And my mom laughed.
Yeah. You do laugh until you realize,
and then yeah, because
they're
not
getting up, and then
right.
You're like, oh,
because that's the thing is that it's trained you so much to think like, these are very relatable characters that you're not thinking of it as, like, this person just maybe committed murder. And so, yeah, so it's very deceptively simple and very good at, like, misdirection and stuff. And I was worried that it would get super, like, depressing.
Uh-huh.
And there are certainly parts that are very raw and very unforgiving.
Yes.
But it was not as...
It wasn't as bleak as it could have been.
Yeah, like, I thought the minute that certain things started happening, I expected it to go full Greek tragedy, full Shakespearean tragedy, where, like, nobody is safe and everyone's gonna die.
Yeah.
But it did not go that far. It was actually, it actually had a very bittersweet ending to it. And I thought it was very, yeah, I dug it.
And we disagree a little bit about the point. John was getting very, I forget what you called it yesterday. What you were saying, you were reading in the metaphors.
Well, yeah, because that there are a couple times when the movie itself says this is a metaphor, right? Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I think you can have different readings of it. I think it is
yeah,
ambiguous on purpose. But I think there are definitely, rather than obscuring those things, I think it was very good at giving you a lot of references so that you can come up with your own kind of, like, reading of what it is. But yeah, it's a lot about class.
Yeah, that's class, what I warfare. Was reading it as. I felt it as very much a class struggle sort of story.
Yeah, I think the distinction that we're making is that there is a specific scene where the characters are getting very philosophical. So I think it's up to you to decide whether the whole movie can actually be read
as just a
universally based on that one scene, or if you want to take it as, like, it's just a story about class that happens to have one scene that has more, like, philosophical implications. So anyway, but I think it was very well directed, very
well acted. Learn to read some titles fast.
Oh, yes, for that. Yeah, I personally, that doesn't bother me very much.
If you're not used to it, it takes a bit of getting.
But
used
yes, to it. Yeah, and it does. They speak very quickly.
Yes.
And so it'll go by pretty quickly. I keep thinking, I love the one scene where they're... Cause so the basic premise, for those who don't know what we're talking about, is a Korean family has to convince a rich family that lives at the top of this, like, hill to... They have to kind of trick them, and they're trying to...
Tricking them into getting work, basically.
Right. And... There's one scene where the sister is, like, rehearsing her story with the brother. And so she's, like, using her fingers.
It's almost like singing it. They're like, yeah, she's just, like, they went over it so many times.
It's like a karaoke
thing.
Like, follow the bouncing ball. She's, like, doing that with her fingers.
That was cute. I liked her character a lot.
Only
I
think child she was my favorite Illinois, character Chicago. Was the sister. Yeah. Yeah, she was cool. Yeah, I dug it. And I think for being a foreign film, they did a lot to make it accessible in that there was not a lot of, you didn't need to know specific things like geographically or anything. Like, there was a lot of, this story could be understood by really people. And I think that's why it probably got rated so highly in the States and across, you know, whoever has access to Rotten Tomatoes, because it was a very universal story.
Yeah.
So I thought it was cool. Then Jericho got real serious.
Yes. The twist has come.
Yeah. So Melissa introduced me to a post 9/11, movie about post apocalypse and
TV show. Not movie.
Oh yes. Yes.
TV series that was unfortunately short lived.
Yes. And what's interesting. So you have a pretty good track record so far. Because you introduced me to Warehouse 13,
and I like that a lot. Warehouse 13 was the bomb.
And Jericho is now pretty good. You're getting cocky. but I like Jericho too. And I like how. What's interesting is that I keep comparing it to Lost because it's a very ensemble show. There are no paranormal elements or anything, but it's interesting to me because there are a lot of different threads and different characters to keep track of. But it is more viscerally because, like, when you make like somebody like Saeed and Lost, an Iraqi guard, you get what they're trying to do, but this just was like, nope, this guy might be a terrorist, and this guy might be a military dude with PTSD, and this is, and like, U.S. just got attacked. Yeah. Like, this is like in your face stuff. And I think they're doing a very good job of world building. And I'm excited to know that even though there are only two seasons of this thing, that there are comics.
Yes.
Because I want to get the comics now and see more of this thing. Because the world is very cool. So right now, what's happening is that there's another town, a New Bern, that's not Bernie.
What?
The Bernie bros have not banded together to attack. I just get, it's every time I see New Bern, I keep thinking of Bernie. but no, there is a town that's gearing up to try to attack Jargo in the second season. And it's interesting because the dude from Psych is the the head of the town.
Lassiter.
Yes. The bad leprechaun from the Disney Channel original movie Luck of the Irish.
Are you serious?
That's him.
What? Oh my word.
We need to watch that.
Plus. Don't need to watch that.
No.
There are other movies we should watch before that one, John.
You don't want to watch Xenon the sequel?
We can watch Xenon. We can watch Mr. Boogity. We can watch the Apple Dumpling Gang. There's a whole lot of other things that we should watch before that one.
I love how these are your examples of the cool things.
I didn't say cool. I just said more important than that one. That's all.
I don't know.
My opinion.
Well, something that we can agree on is that this globe-trotting season of Gargoyles is pretty cool.
It is the bomb.
So, I feel like the storyline that preceded it is so much worse than the post that, like, because there's this weird time travel
thing. Oh, that was nuts.
It was just kind of weird and, like, it was so convoluted.
It was hard to follow the cartoon.
What the heck was going on? So, but after that, they go to this place called Avalon, where the gargoyles are from, where Goliath is from. And after that, they're in this ship that did the weird sisters make it for them?
No, it's just Avalon sends you off. When you leave Avalon, this is what happens.
Grinds my gears about mid-English fantasy. Is that this just happens? Your ship just kind of does things when you're leaving this place.
They travel to the fairy realm.
Don't try to make this make sense.
When you leave the fairy realm, you get sent where you need to go. Is what it is. Where you need to be.
Well, regardless of your
stupid
fairy rules.
You're lucky I didn't do that in my novel. Okay, when they come back from the wild, they don't randomly get transported somewhere stupid.
That's a little preview for the. Well, this is a book. Because of the weird ship rules, we're being sent across the globe to different places.
Yes.
And so far, we've gone to France and North America.
Yes.
And why am I drunk? Oh, not Bucharest. It's Bucharest.
Prague.
Prague. There we go. I knew it was somewhere.
There was a golem.
Yes, cool. There was a golem, yes. So it's been fun because it's all about, as Melissa hints to, it's all about exploring different cultures, mythology, and how they more or less, like...
Oh, and somewhere in Canada, they did that cool Native American, Canadian thing. I don't know if it was Canada.
I don't know.
Far north, with the raven...
Yes, I mentioned that.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it's good to expand, because... Apparently, those were gargoyles, the totem mystic
things.
Anyway, all that to say, it's been pretty cool for this season. And for those of you who still have not gotten Disney Plus or checked out Gargoyles in any fashion, what are you doing?
Do it. What do you do with your life?
Don't listen to this. We're stupid.
Go watch Gargoyles.
No. And then there's a bunch of movies, shows that we want to check out. In the Heights, just because we're... Because
Lin-Manuel Miranda is awesome. That's why.
Yes, he is, Melissa. She called him Morales.
I called Lin-Manuel Morales before.
I think I found it in my heart.
Why would he be mad at being Spider-Man? That's all I have to say. But
as a fan, for some reason I take offense. Even though technically he is a Spider-Man.
Which would offend you more?
I don't know. Anyway, I don't know anymore.
He's got a musical coming out and it's gonna rock.
Yeah, because he did I'm pretty sure it was on Broadway. Either that or very close to Broadway. Before Hamilton took off. That was his pre-Hamilton show. And so it's cool to see him being able to do that in a big way.
And apparently, this is what I was going to say. I couldn't remember it beforehand. They're going to also make a movie version of Hamilton, but using the actual Broadway cast.
Oh,
as opposed to what they usually do with musicals, which is stupid, and find Hollywood actors that don't know how to sing. Thank you for actually using the Broadway stars for being in a Broadway thing.
I did not expect that this rant, but I'm glad that you could get it on your
chest. After Les Mis, it's just really, people, can we not do this?
Well, yeah, no, comparing, because I watched a recording of the Broadway version of Les Mis. And it is very different than just seeing the Hollywood people.
Yes.
Because Anne Hathaway did a very good job.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway was fine. That you could, I don't know so much about Hugh Jackman and Russell Crowe.
I think that having Hugh Jackman be able to do the acty bits of that role.
Although Hugh Jackman has done, I think, actual Broadway stuff.
Yeah. I think that's what's strange about it is that I don't think he has the vocal range of a Broadway person.
Not as much.
He hasn't had to push himself to that thing that much. But yes. In the Heights, Hamilton thing.
Also, random side note about Hugh Jackman singing. I forget if it was the Tonys or the Oscars or what, but anyway, that's all I'm taking real quick. I'm sorry.
No, I thought I stuck it past you. Looked at a fake watch, everybody.
Trying to brush
me. Hurry up.
So, they had him sing a song with Beyonce on stage, and I was just like, oh, sweetie.
When was this?
Why would you do this to yourself? You are not going to beat Beyonce's pipes, ever. What are you doing? That's what I was saying. I don't remember. I think it was the Oscars one year. But anyway, I was like, that's sad. You need a better agent.
Invisible Man. There's a interesting adaptation coming out.
Yes.
I like this because it is not, they're not trying to do, there's this weird thing with reboots where a lot of it seems to be they're making half of the movie turns out to be a trailer for the movie that you thought you were going to come watch. Because with something that simple, you watch a trailer for it, you know the premise. It's very odd when you waste half of the thing. People were talking about that about Spider-Man for a while. Because if you keep redoing the origin and you did a movie five years ago.
5 years ago, why are you doing this again?
It doesn't make sense. Anyway, so I'm glad with this version of The Invisible Man, the premise is that Elizabeth Moss, I think from the Handmaid's Tale, she stars as this person who escapes this kind of crazy, psychotic boyfriend, and then he winds up, supposedly he's dead, and he's committed suicide. And she is supposed to inherit some things from him. But then she finds out that he did some kind of experimental thing on himself and that he's invisible. But really his main objective is to make her seem crazy and to continue to torture her as an invisible man.
Yeah,
and that is so creepy.
It is very creepy, and it looks pretty awesome.
But it's a very interesting thing to have the whole premise be, rather than him just being, because in the original, I read the book, I own the book, and it's a very much don't play God thing, because it's you get this, all this power, and you don't know what to do with it, and so it drives the person crazy. But rather than it just be he just, goes in bathhouses and steals things and whatever, it's just he's focusing on one person.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting thing, because then you have this like cat and mouse thing.
And I do like, I tend to like movies of people slowly going insane. I don't know why, but it is
you're to me slowly a special learn.
Sign of an actor to be able to do that well.
Yeah, it's very, it's interesting to me that you don't specifically try to write through. But actually, you know what? I feel like that is a truism with certain writers that you tend to like to watch the things that you don't necessarily write.
Yes.
And like vice versa sometimes. And so it's interesting because people will experiment sometimes in genres. But anyway, it's an interesting, I think.
Well, take I had on that idea for a thriller in a B&B. I might try that.
Next episode. Melissa pitches her thriller. There's an adaptation of Emma coming out.
Oh, really? Who's going to be in
it? The chick from... So it's the young lady who was in... But for those of you who are upset, maybe
not,
that I say
it's
chick...
It's not his fault. I say it all the
I
time.
I got that from my sister. My fault. So...
I call them all chicks. Chick or chica.
The young lady who was in Glass. She was in...
Oh, okay.
Split and Glass. She's the main character.
The cheerleader... Well, she's not a cheerleader.
No.
No.
She was... I guess she was a goth chick. Yes. I don't know. She was...
The not
she was,
cheerleader.
She was a norm. She was a normie. She wasn't necessarily anything. You know, she is the... I think plays Emma. And it seems like it's trying to make it... Excuse me. They're kind of billing it as kind of like a quirky movie. Not necessarily comedy, but they're trying to make it kind of like more effervescent, I guess. It's not very... It's not like...
It's not as repressed as most British dramas are.
Yes. Yeah, they're very good. Speaking of that repressed, Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn is also coming out soon. And I'm interested to see if DC can salvage their movie universe. Because I don't necessarily like any of the Zack Snyder stuff. But I liked Wonder Woman.
Yeah, Wonder Woman was good.
I kind of have mixed feelings.
I
liked
Shazam.
Yes, Shazam I also liked. I don't really have any strong feelings about Suicide Squad.
Eh.
There were elements of it that were alright.
I want that Mexican fire dude to have his own movie.
Yes, it's kind of weird to have all these characters that are so good on paper not necessarily get much to do besides make like grimace at each other. Which is why I'm interested in Birds of Prey, because you get to have Margot Robbie do what she does, and not really have the restriction of all this other stuff, because I felt like she was out of place in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So I think to have a movie that's built around her,
right,
works a little bit better. Oh, I'm also interested in Call of the Wild.
Yes.
Because they're doing a version with Harrison Ford as the human in that story. But Adrian and Dalton of Strictly Lit, they reviewed that a few months ago. And it's a very interesting because it's one of those stories that doesn't necessarily have a human
protagonist.
Yeah. The dog is the protagonist.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to get one that's more focused seemingly on the dog, even though there is a human.
I should watch. That's another one that's on Disney Plus, the old one.
Oh, haha.
Or no, I don't think it's Call of the Wild. I think it's White Fang is what they did.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, they're both.
The other one.
I actually have a copy that is both
have,
of those.
Did I have? Oh, yeah, because they are very, they're two sides of the same sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, and then there's another Peter Pan adaptation. We kind of went over that before the show.
When you say it like that, I'm just like, why? But then I'm like, oh, no, it's the Wendy-focused one, which it really ought to be. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, focused on Wendy.
Yeah, I haven't read the book, Peter Pan. Is Peter Pan from Peter Pan's perspective?
No.
Peter Piper picked?
No. Actually, I don't know for sure, because I haven't read it either. But from what I know of the play, it is based on what, it is from Wendy's perspective.
Okay. So yeah, but it's the guy that directed Beasts of the Southern Wild. Before the show, we kind of went into how he seems to deify children.
Yes.
And have them be the catalyst for for saving salvation. The world.
I'm like, no, this is not.
So,
and I had a rant,
I'm interested,
which I have spared you from.
I'm interested to see how that, because the aspect I like about it is the magical realism stuff. And I'd like to see a version of Peter Pan that's like that. But we shall see. And then there's a CW witchy show called Motherland Fort Salem. Remember we saw the ads for this? You were hype about it when it was on.
Oh, that's right, because it was the witches that are like a military force, witches. Like,
yes.
Yes, I was hyped about that. Because that's like, look, if you're going to put up an army of witches, man, just do it. Make it an army. Why are you hiding in cabins and waiting to get burned at the stake? Just go kick some butt.
Right.
I mean, seriously.
And it seems like an interesting spin on it to me.
Yeah.
Where they're an army fighting back.
Right.
And that seemed like an interesting
premise. And I also kind of want to see at least one episode of, is it Hunters? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. It's kind of like a historical fiction.
Yeah. It's Nazi Hunters.
Jewish revenge.
Yeah.
Fantasy type thing.
Because it is by Mr. Jordan Peele.
Yes.
Who we love.
He is, and he's very deft at doing politically,
adept. I don't think adept is a word.
No.
It's either deft or adept. You don't put an A in front of deft.
You can deftly handle something.
Deftly, but there's not an A in front of that word.
Okay, when we come back. Okay, so we're back from that interesting detour.
I heard it wrong. I'm sorry. You guys can rewind it and make sure that I didn't hear him wrong and he didn't say adept. I don't know where that came
from. I might have technically added, because there was a, what do you call it, an improv show I was watching, and somebody was doing an impression of somebody else, and they kept saying, smell of this. Smell it. And then when they talked to him, he was just like, do I say that? I don't say that. And then they showed a clip of him definitely saying it. So it might have been one of those things. So plugs, what do we want everyone to do?
I'm going to have a book next spring. But if you want to hear updates about that and other writings and musics from me, I am on momtoast.com or momtoast_Mel on Twitter or momtoast on Instagram. I'm about to launch my All the Crazy Things I Have to Read This Year Instagram post because I have way too many books.
Her TBR was going to be like to the roof.
Yes, it's terrifying.
Nah. Have you read the Aeronauts?
Windlass? Yes, I have.
Okay. Because I keep looking at
Jim Butcher, I read in 5 minutes. That's just how that works.
That would be an interesting thing for my purposes to read your opinion on, because it seems like an interesting... It's interesting that he went from urban fantasy to steampunk.
But he gave me what I wanted in steampunk.
Oh.
As opposed to all the other crazy crap I read in steampunk. It is not what I wanted.
To be continued. I'm a John Matos writer. Excuse me, on most things. And please check out Strider Talk, both on YouTube. And you can follow our Twitter.
And if you like silly songs about dragons, check out Manic Pixie.
Oh, yes. Hi. And then I don't know when ThinkSpot is going to be available to the wider public, but I am writing on there. But all the posts that are going up there are also on my blog at johnmatoswriter.com. So you can follow that if you want things. I'm hoping to write about Parasite sometime soon. Oh, and then a political essay on the myth of the American idiot.
Ooh.
That I think is the one thing I'm working on right now. So yes, all those things. Thank you for listening. We will be back next month with more interesting things. Hopefully some of the things that we mentioned today that we want to get into. We'll talk to you later.
Ah.
Bye-bye.